We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com and on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes, we'll be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding right here in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. Off to the Races, as always, is powered by The Racing Biz. You can catch them on their website, theracingbiz.com. Social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatnot. Look for at The Racing Biz. Also, free mobile app. Go to the website and track that down for your Apple and Android devices. Never miss a beat. Always stay up to date with the latest news and info from the world of thoroughbred racing. Shout out and thanks to a couple program supporters. Those include the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Wanamakers.com online horse auction site, True Valor standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. We've got a lot, and I mean a lot, to do today. A little bit later, we're going to talk with trainer Phil Capuano. You're going to learn something very, very cool about the silks one of his jockeys wore this past week. Bird Moberly's going to join us to talk about her Salima Stakes contender, Low Mileage. Jockey Tyler Connor going to be by to tell us about his Laurel Futurity, Mount Tropenhagen. And John Piasek's going to come on by and help us try to make sense of those races with some handicapping tips. But first, we got word this week, some sad news to pass along. Probably already heard this. The great Baltimore Orioles Hall of Fame third baseman Brooks Robinson passed away earlier this week. He was 86 years old, a tremendous baseball player. You can kind of boil down his fantastic career to two facts, it seems to me. The first is that he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, receiving more than 90% of the votes his first year of eligibility, straight from retirement into the Hall of Fame. And the second is that he played 23 years for the Baltimore Orioles. No other player in Major League history played more years with a single team than Brooks Robinson did with the Orioles. And that helps to explain some of his enduring popularity in the Baltimore area. He also was, and you won't see this in a lot of the obits, although I did write about this on theracingbiz.com, he was an avid racing fan. And we're going to bring by Gary Quill, a lifelong Baltimorean, a lifelong Orioles fan, somebody who idolized Brooks Robinson, and also got to talk with him on a few occasions, including one memorable interview at Timonium, to help us understand the legacy and meaning of Brooks Robinson. But let me start with this before we bring Gary in. Let me just play this snippet of Gary's interview with Brooks at Timonium 4 years ago in 2019.
Thanks a lot for joining us. You're quite the handicapper as well.
I wish I was. I'll bring along Ronnie Hansen sometime. We're good buddies, and he's a good handicapper, but I did win that race thanks to that number of three horse getting disqualified, I guess. But anyway, I'm a long way from getting even. I just come fun to sit down and enjoy myself, have lunch, and it's a great day when I go to the races. I love it.
And now here's Gary Quill.
Gary, thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. I wish we were doing it under happier circumstance. I wanted to start and ask you this. When you learned of Brooks's passing, I'll tell you, when I learned of Brooks's passing, I did one of those kind of little involuntary, oh no, things. How did you respond?
Well, it's funny. I'm on this like tech service of this other website, and they supply all the up-to-date information on all Baltimore sports teams. And I think it was probably around late afternoon, like maybe 5 or whatever, and I get this text about, you know, the Baltimore Orioles announcing the passing of Brooks Robinson, age 86. And I kind of just looked at it, and it was almost like someone told me one of my relatives died. It was it hit me that way. And it was weird because, I don't know, it was because I felt so much more connected to Brooks doing the interview at Timonium 4 years ago, or just the fact that, you know, as a young boy growing up in Baltimore and being a huge Orioles fan, I was spoiled that they were winners from age 8 to mid-60s, you know, all the way through the 70s. And, you know, one of the major reasons was the guy who played third base, Brooks Robinson. And, you know, as a kid, you just look at baseball players as, you know, idols, you know, guys you look up to when you play little league baseball, you know, you want to emulate them. And not until I got older and had the pleasure of seeing Brooks Robinson at Laurel a few times and just have an idle chatter with him. And then having the pleasure of getting down and having the interview with him. And then just afterwards, you got to know Brooks Robinson, the man, and how humble he was. You can't help but understand, I guess, my reaction. And I've talked to a lot of other, you know, friends of mine who are even younger than me that he had an impact on in their sports life and maybe even crossing paths with him. You just felt like he was a person in your life mainly because of the way he treated people, you know, in his retirement days.
Now, you mentioned this. You grew up as an O's fan. You were kind of just old enough, I guess, to probably celebrate the 66 series win. And then, of course, they went to the series three more times in the next few years and won another one in 70. What did those teams and what did Brooks in particular mean to, you know, little Gary and all the little Garys in Baltimore back then?
Well, I mean, I was 8 years old in 66 when they won the World Series, and I was lucky enough that I lived a short bus ride from Memorial Stadium. So back then they had a program called the Junior Orioles where I think for 50 cents, a total of 50 cents, from the Cloverland Dairy milkman who delivered milk. Oh, gosh, I can't believe I actually lived in that era, but I did.
There were dinosaurs roaming the earth.
I think you got to go to like 8 games for a total of 50 cents, and you were a junior Oriole, and you sat out in the cheap seats in the bleachers on benches. But you know, they're going to those games, but, you know, as a kid, I used every excuse to play every sport in the neighborhood. And, you know, when uniforms were distributed in our little league for baseball, basketball, soccer, it wanted number 5. It didn't matter. And, you know, it didn't matter what position they played. Not everybody aspired to be a third baseman, but obviously number 5 was the most popular number. Brooks was just everybody's hero because he was, you know, Baltimore was your typical blue-collar town, and Brooks just kind of was the guy who just showed up, you know, to work every day, made the game look easy. He just went about, wasn't anything flashy, and even the way he played the game was humble in his own way. And I thought it was apropos on the night that the Orioles played, on the afternoon that he passed, I saw a statistic that in his career, he had there were 10 games in which he had the only RBI in a 1-0 victory, which obviously baseball has all kinds of statistics that they pull out of where, and that's still a record that, you know, how many 1-0 games are there anyway in this day and age? But anyway, so he had, he holds the record for the most RBIs in a 1-0 victory. And so that night, the Orioles won 1-0. So
sometimes the baseball gods give us what we need, right?
It's definitely the case.
Now let's spin ahead. I wanted to ask you, so 2019, you got the chance to interview Brooks Robinson when he came out to the Maryland State Fair. I played a clip when he was talking about his love of going to the races, and I, as you know, I was sort of watching the interview just as sort of an observer, and so I had a particular experience of it, but I'm curious as to what your experience of it, like what was that like for you to get the chance to sit down with Brooks Robinson and talk baseball and talk horse racing?
Well, when you twisted my arm to do it, and I thank you very much for letting, deferring to me being the Baltimore sports fan that I am and have always been, I didn't panic, but I'm all of a sudden find myself quickly Googling all of his statistics to make sure I get it right. I mean, I know he won 16 gold gloves, but I got to make sure I get it right. I'm like doing all this quick homework, trying to get all the stats right. And it was almost like, I don't know, maybe a high authority came over me and just said, just play it cool. And it was like talking to my dad. I mean, he was so gracious and welcoming, and the way he just went about talking, it put me at ease and made me feel that much prouder that, I had the opportunity to interview the human vacuum cleaner, a guy who was beloved by every Oriole fan who play. And, I think because, he was from Little Rock, Arkansas, but he made Baltimore his home both in the off season and even after his playing career. And I think that even his popularity, if it's possible, could have even went up in his retirement years, because, he played in the 50s, 60s, and the 70s. And, Baltimore had the Bullets, who moved to Landover, D.C. became, and shortly thereafter, they went from the Baltimore Bullets to the Capitol Bullets, to the Washington Bullets, to the Washington Wizards. So we lost our NBA team. And then in 83, we lost the Baltimore Colts. So the only professional team in town were the Orioles. And whether they were good or not, everybody embraced them. And the fact that you had former Orioles and the best one, Mr. Oriole, still around, hanging around, showing up at events and just being a class act. How could you not, fall in love and adopt this man as your, a relative of yours and feel that way when you heard of his passing?
In fact, demonstrating what you're saying about his enduring popularity while you were conducting that interview, a crowd 3 or 4 people deep gathered in kind of a semicircle around the set where you did it and then broke out into applause at the end of it. It was a cool, cool moment, like a chills, gives me chills kind of moment. Were you aware that crowd was coming together at that point?
No, because, you know, as you know, Frank, on top of, you know, you got the lights for the camera, and I was just so focused on, you know, delivering the interview and trying to ask the questions that I had and that I thought every Brooks Robinson fan would want to hear. I was just focused on that. And like you said, not until, you know, we finished the interview, shook his hand and thanked him, and we stood up and everybody was applauding. And I thought it, you know, it was really, really cool. And I immediately thought, and I looked at the crowd, and they were all, you know, 50, 60-something men and women. And I immediately thought, you know, these people for the last 5 minutes, or at least right now, they're kids again. You know, they're reliving their youth. They're being able to see their baseball hero from their youth that maybe they didn't get to shake his hand or get a picture with, you know, at the ballpark one day. And as you know, there were tons of selfies happening and people shaking hands, and awesome about the whole experience.
That was Gary Quill there remembering the late, great Brooks Robinson, Baltimore Orioles Hall of Famer, passing away earlier this week. Also an avid racing fan, a loss to baseball, to Baltimore, and to racing. Still to come today, Off to the Races, coming up in 10, 15 minutes or so. Bird Moberly and Grady Griffin, they own low mileage going in today's Salima Stakes at Laurel Park. And following that, going to have John Piazzik in to help us make sense of the three turf stakes scheduled for Saturday afternoon at Laurel. In addition to the Salima, there's the Laurel Futurity. Those are both for two-year-olds, the Salima for fillies, and then the mile-and-a-half Japan Turf Cup. So John Piazzik joining us, end of the hour here. Catch us up on that, as well as some things going on with the Maryland horse breeders. Right now I wanted to visit with a young trainer, Phil Capuano. He took over his uncle Dale's string at the beginning of this year, with Dale Capuano retiring after a long and extremely successful career training here in Maryland, and Phil making a path for himself here so far in 2023, won the Small Wonder on Wednesday at Delaware Park, was just great now, 2 for 2 in her young career. Here's my conversation with trainer Phil Capuano. Phil, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. Let me start you with this. Just Great won the Small Wonder on Wednesday at Delaware Park. She's now 2 for 2. Two races later, Copper Tex won the first state dash for your father, Gary Capuano. How cool was it for you guys to take the two big races at Delaware on Wednesday?
Oh, it was a great feeling. You know, obviously working for my dad for so long, you know, even though now we'll run against each other. But it was good for me to be able to root for him and for him to root for me. So it was a great feeling, and I'm so happy for him and the connections of the horse, Rose Petal Stables, Harry Loso, just absolutely great people. So couldn't have been happier with the way the day turned out.
It was kind of neat because I talked with you after Just Great had won the Small Wonder, and you were kind of joking, well, I did my part, now the pressure's on him. And talking to him after Copper Tax had won, and he said, you know what, I don't usually get nervous, but I was feeling a little bit nervous today.
Yeah, I mean, I think any time you've got, you know, especially big favorites like Just Great and Copper Tax were, you know, you feel the added pressure, especially a horse like Copper Tax. I mean, I think that race was a little tougher than the Small Wonder, and there were some nice horses in there. So, you know, you're always worried carrying a couple race win streak going into a race like that. So, pressure's always on.
Speaking of pressure, that is something I wanted to ask you about. Now, Just Great, you know, was a $6,000 yearling purchase by your Uncle Dale, whose stable you kind of took over at the beginning of the year when he retired. Horse wins by 13 lengths at First Asking and then sells to Team Valor, which obviously those are high-end connections. They had Animal Kingdom, Kentucky Derby winner, among many other good horses. Was there added pressure? Did you feel added pressure in the first eight dash, first start with the new connections?
Yeah, I mean, I think any time you have a horse like Just Great win as impressively as she did, you know, to try to follow that up with another, you know, not only a victory, but to try to repeat that kind of effort, obviously, it is tremendous stress. And then, you know, like you said, Team Valor, big name in the game, as well as Mr. Gary Barber, who's partners with the horse. Pressure, and I'm just happy, you know, that she was able to eke out the win.
Well, and it was, let's put it, it was closer than the betting public expected it to be. And, you know, looking back, you won your first stake earlier this year with Always in a Hurry and the Whiteley, and you had to sweat out an inquiry in that race. And then this one, you just had to kind of sweat out a kind of a blanket finish with three or four horses in the picture. I guess you're probably looking for a little less stressful victory the next time you get into this kind of race, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anytime, you know, any kind of race, if you can win going away by 13, you know, you feel good. But, you know, that's what happens. You know, her first race, I think she only ran against two other winners and then a couple maidens. And then in this race, there were a few more winners. And, I mean, the horse that was runner-up, Mark Schumann's horse, I mean, that horse is also a maiden, but it's run quite a few good seconds. So, you know, I don't want to take anything away from his horse. So, yeah. You know, I was just happy with her gutsy effort, time out. You know, she was on the outside, just sat off right off the pace and made her move when she was ready. And, you know, this past performance on Wednesday, had the inside, you know, I'll give rider of the two a lot of credit, Danny Centeno. You know, he knew the rail wasn't all that good, so he left the rail open for her, and then, you know, the three kind of kept her inside, and you know, I was a little worried around the turn, but, you know, she's a nice filly, and she made her own room at the top of the stretch and went on from there, so she did everything, you know, we kind of hoped for a horse her caliber to do, is to overcome some trouble and some adversity and, you know, still win.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of ideal, isn't it? You get a little bit of education, but you also get the money at the end of the day. So that works out well. Now, where should we look to see Just Great going forward?
Well, you know, I'd spoken with the new connections after they had purchased her, what my plans were. And, you know, as of right now, we're still going to follow that. So we'll go look to run the Maryland Million Lassie on October 14th. And then from there, you know, they have the Smart Halo in November, and then the Maryland Juvenile Championship filly race in December. And then after that, you know, we'll see. We'll go from there. But tentatively, that's the plan that's been laid out for her.
Talking with trainer Phil Capuano, Just Great, just won the Small Wonder at Delaware Park. Now, there's kind of a neat full circle thing here, Phil, right? Because your dad trained Captain Bodgett, and Team Valor bought into Captain Bodgett, but left the horse with your father, Gary Capuano, and he went on to be the beaten favorite. Basically, he was two heads from winning both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes that year. And now this is kind of potentially your first consequential horse, and here's Team Valor again. How did this sort of come together?
You know, really, Mr. Ullman has a little bit of a connection to somebody that works with Team Valor, Fred Heyman. So, you know, they had gotten talking about Just Great after her debut victory, and obviously, Mr. Irwin, the principal of Team Valor, got to talking with Mr. Ullman, and, you know, they struck a deal. So, you know, it's nice to maybe think that in time she could be potentially a horse similar to Captain Bodgett that goes on to run in some big races and see where that takes us. I mean, my father helped me out by giving me the set of silks that Captain Bodgett wore in the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby. So he told me, you know, take me half as far as they took him. So, you know, they've been good luck so far.
Was your rider wearing those silks on Wednesday?
Yep. Those are the silks that Alex Solis rode and leave the Florida Derby, Wood Memorial, Kentucky Derby, and the Preakness. So.
Oh my
gosh.
They're
well traveled silks. So, you know, I told Rodriguez in the paddock, I said, look, these are some nice silks. You know, they've never been worse than third. So let's, let's at least try to keep that going.
That's fantastic. What a great story there. Now, was there, you know, growing up, you're a little young to remember the Captain Bodgett's career per se, but I imagine there was kind of family lore about Captain Bodgett. Is that something you heard about much as a kid?
Anytime you've got a horse like him that, you know, is based out of Maryland and his whole career was based, except for when he went down to Florida in the winter. I mean, you hear a lot about a horse like him and, you know, the trip it took my father and my family on, you know, unfortunately, you know, we'd all like to see it go a little further than it did and turn out just a touch better than, you know, where it ended up. But, you know, it's just a great story. And you like to see, you know, something like that happen again for somebody out of Maryland. But, you know, my father he's not too sentimental when he talks about a horse like him. You know, he just said, anytime I've talked to him about Captain Bodgett, he was always grateful that, you know, Team Valor kept the horse with him. Obviously, anybody that knows the story knows that he had a disformed tendon on the left front. And, you know, I think it was tough for the new connections to send the horse to anybody but Gary, since he had done so well with him. I mean, he was close to being, he was close to stardom, that's for sure.
I've always maintained, you know, a lot of people point to Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. I think that was the best of all Preaknesses. It was, you know, him, Free House, Silver Charm, you know, Noses and Heads Apart, and then Touch Gold running a freakish race after a bad start to be three quarters of a length behind or thereabouts. I mean, that was an amazing race, and just kind of tough luck that your dad's horse didn't get the money there. Last thing, and I will let you go. You took over training for your uncle String, as we mentioned earlier this year. So now you're training on your own after having worked with your father for a number of years. Have there been surprises or things you didn't quite expect now being the guy who's in charge and the guy who makes the decisions?
You know, one thing I'll give my father and his clients a lot of credit for, you know, all the years that he let me run everything at Delaware, you know, he was never looking over my shoulder. You know, he would tell me, you know, just train them the way you think they need to be trained and go from there. So, I mean, a lot of the things that, you know, come to expect with the horses, I mean, these horses are good one day and, you know, the next they're not so good, and you just try to, you know, just ride the wave. I mean, when things are going good, they're good, and when they're not, they're not. So, you know, from a training standpoint, working with the horses, there's too many surprises. More, you know, from the business side, running a business, that's kind of something that, you know, it's taken me a little while to get used to, and it's more the business and administrative side than necessarily the working with the horses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's always the thing, getting paid and making sure your employees get paid and keeping up with the records and all that jazz. Yep, a big part of it too. Well, Phil Capuano, thank you so much for joining us here on Off to the Races. Look forward to following your career as it goes forward. Look forward to following Just Great and to seeing the old Captain Bodge at Silks back in the winner's circle again soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to have me on.
That was trainer Phil Capuano, trainer of Just Great, Just Great winner of the Small Wonder, headed towards the Maryland Million Lassie. And what a story, man. What a story that is. The silks worn by Captain Bodgett's rider, Alex Solis. Captain Bodgett, as we just talked about, second in the Kentucky Derby as the favorite, second in the Preakness as the favorite. Pretty spectacular horse in his own right. Those silks getting new life with Jamie Rodriguez aboard Just Great. Looking forward to following that story as it develops. As I said, a little bit later on, John Piazza going to join me and handicap the stakes races from Laurel Park this afternoon, as well as some news and updates from our friends at the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. But right now, let's talk to the connections of a horse in the Salima Stakes today. That horse is Low Mileage. And those connections are Bird Moberly and Grady Griffin, who race as Bird and Grady LLC, appropriately enough. Low Mileage, winner of the Jamestown Stakes last time out. And 2-for-4 in her brief career, Jamestown on the turf at Colonial Sprinting, going to try and stretch out this afternoon. Here is my conversation with Bird and Grady. Bird, thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. You got Low Mileage in the Salima Stakes coming up later in the day on Saturday. Kind of neat. I mean, the Salima is sort of one of the great historic Maryland races. Maybe not quite the race it used to be, but still a tremendous history behind it. Kind of neat to have your filly going in this spot.
Absolutely. You know, anytime you're running in a stake is exciting, especially for little people like us.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I was looking back at the record, a couple of years ago, you guys were winning everything in sight. You won in 2021, you won three stakes with Local Motive and Buff My Boots at over $400,000 in earnings. That was a pretty nice year. That probably paid a few feed bills.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, it did. I could breathe a little easier that year.
You told me John Salzman Jr., your trainer, picked out Low Mileage in the Facing Tipton October sale last year, the yearling sale. What was it that, what did he and you guys see in this horse that made you want to take a swing with her?
Well, actually, you know, we don't even go to the sales. John has such a great eye for a horse, and we just give him money and say, pick us out a decent horse, and he goes over there, and he knows what he likes, he knows what we like, and so that's just how we do it. He doesn't need us there saying, well, what are we going to do now, John? You know, he doesn't need that. So, you know, we just let him go do his thing.
I like that. I imagine that's every trainer's dream system. Give me some money and turn me loose, right?
Well, you know, if you don't trust the people that you have around you, they shouldn't be around you.
Well,
You know, so that's just how we do it, and it seems to work. So, you know.
Yeah. Can't argue with success. So this horse comes out, wins at First Asking at Laurel in May, which, I mean, it's the Saltzmans have made kind of a cottage industry of getting two-year-olds ready to run in those very early races when there's only a few other horses ready to run, and that's been very successful for them. But then comes back and goes second, runs third, and then wins the Jamestown Stakes on the turf. So you've got a horse that has won on turf and dirt, which is, I mean, I imagine you guys are pretty excited about that because it opens up all sorts of possibilities. Is that how you're looking at it?
Yeah.
We take our racetrack with us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the turf course at Colonial is very unique. And, you know, so it is exciting that just kind of gives you another option. You know, it isn't just dirt. You know, she'll run on dirt or turf. So that just kind of opens up more options for you.
When you say the Colonial turf course is unique, what do you mean by that?
Well, the turf course there, it's very, very smooth, and you know, it's just a little different than a lot of the time what you'll find at another track. But that's okay. I mean, you know, everybody's got to run on it, and you just deal with what you got and go forward with it.
We're talking with Bird Moberly and Grady Griffin here. Bird and Grady LLC owns Low Mileage, 12-1 on the morning line in this afternoon's Salima Stakes at Laurel Park. Now, when you were headed towards the Jamestown on the turf, what was were you thinking that she would turf, or were you thinking this may be an easy spot as a Virginia restricted race? I mean, what was sort of the thought process as you approached that race?
It was just that, you know, it's a Virginia bred race and we got to go for it. We didn't know if she would like the turf or not. You just don't know until you put them on there. So that was just sort of that thought process.
And she ran really well that day, won easily at odds of 3-1, drawing away. Her breeding seems to indicate that she'll stretch out to the Salima distance of 1 1/16. Is that what you and John are thinking here?
Yeah, that's, you know, the way she runs, it certainly, you know, leans towards that. There again, you just never know until you try it. You know, so we'll see.
Isn't that always the answer in horse racing? We'll put them in, we'll see what happens, right?
That's it. It, you know, hey, things happen.
No, for sure. Pretty neat stuff. Now, where are Bird and Grady of Bird and Grady LLC going to be Saturday afternoon?
We'll be there.
In the winter, sir.
That's all I hope for, sure.
There you go. Attaboy.
You know, you just hope for the best, and you know, things happen, but when it all comes together, it's beautiful. His groom, Juan, is a very nice guy. He does a great job with her. He keeps her calm. And so, yeah, you know, all the people that we've met along the way and everything, it's all about the relationships. And so it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool stuff. All right. Low Mileage is one going short on the dirt, on the turf. Going to try going long on the turf in this afternoon's Salima Stakes. Bird Moberly and Grady Griffin, thanks so much for joining me here on Off to the Races. Good luck today. And we'll visit with you in the winner's circle, hopefully.
Thank you for having us.
That was Bird Moberly, Grady Griffin, Bird and Grady LLC, going to send out Low Mileage in the Salima Stakes this afternoon at Laurel Park. Now, a few races after that, the day's feature, $150,000 Laurel Futurity. In a moment, going to talk with jockey Tyler Connor. He's going to be on Troppenhagen, the morning line favorite, 3-1 in the Laurel Futurity. Coming up after that, John Piazza going to join us, try to make sense of some of these races, do a little bit of handicapping. But right now, let's bring in Tyler Connor here, jockey of Troppenhagen, the 3-1 morning line favorite in the Laurel Futurity.
Tyler, thanks so much for joining me here on Off to the Races. Wanted to get you on and talk a little bit about Troppenhagen, who hopefully, at least hopefully for folks in Maryland, is going to go in the Laurel Futurity on Saturday, but if not, headed to the perhaps the Pilgrim at Aqueduct. This was a super impressive debut for this horse. Were you kind of expecting this sort of effort?
Honestly, no, I wasn't. I worked him in the morning a couple of times, and he was just kind of very even and lazy. I kind of had to ride him the whole way around there on the dirt in the morning. So that's kind of why I sent him out of there, just to get him into the race a little bit, and then he did the rest from there. It was very surprising how much speed he showed. I did not expect that whatsoever. But clearly he took to the grass very well, which they knew he kind of would with his breeding and stuff. But yeah, it was I think they expected him to run well, but it impressed me for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he goes out of there in 46 and change, 11 flat basically for 6 furlongs, and then just draws away from there. That's racehorse time, especially for a 2-year-old.
Yeah, it was very impressive first time. It didn't feel that fast during the race. He was tugging on me the whole way around there, and it was going very, very easy for him, honestly. It was kind of like a gallop the first part of the race. And I think, honestly, once he kind of got away from horses, he was just kind of waiting. Because when the horse kind of got to him galloping out, he took a hold again. So I think there was plenty there. And I think he was just kind of, you know, playing a little bit. He didn't really know what to do yet.
This is he's potentially proof of the old adage that a good horse can come from anywhere. He was a $14,000 yearling. He's by DeMarchelier and being trained at Penn National. So not sort of the markers of a horse that runs like that, but that was very impressive. So what's the game plan Saturday if you guys post? Is it going to be something similar since you're breaking from the inside, you know, kind of get engaged pretty early?
Yeah, I mean, that would be my plan. There's a little bit of pace in there with those horses coming off sprints, but honestly, I think he's probably faster than they are. And I don't want to get in a fight with him. I don't want to get behind horses and kind of have to take a big hold and get him checked or whatever, because he's a very headstrong horse anyways. I worked him the other day, and he doesn't give me a whole lot of respect to what I want him to do. He kind of wants to do what he wants, and he's very strong. So, yeah, hopefully I can just kind of bounce out of there from the one hole and let him pull me along.
Yeah, that was that's pretty exciting. Is it? I mean, what's it like for you guys as jockeys when you get on a horse and he surprises you like that, and then now you're headed into $150,000 stake? It's got to be kind of fun, because are you thinking like, who knows where we might go from here?
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting, especially like you said, coming from Penn National, we're under the radar a little bit. The owner and trainer, you know, have known he's been not special from the beginning, but knew he was talented. Like I said, he's bred for the grass and, you know, kind of European bred a little bit. So, I mean, they kind of had some expectations, and they knew he could run. But, yeah, it's exciting. Especially even going to Monmouth first time, you know, to beat horses from there is a little tougher than, you know, breaking a maiden at Penn. And honestly, I think he could have won in New York if he went there. It's great. And if he can get it done at Laurel or in the Pilgrim, whatever he decides to run, you know, maybe even Breeders' Cup type of talk if he runs a big race again. So it's definitely cool.
Yeah, no, and we've seen horses come through these races and go to the Breeders' Cup. I think Sharing won the Salima a couple of years ago, and then the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf and a couple of years ago as well at Colonial Downs, four-wheel drive won one of their stakes and went on to win the Breeders' Cup. So it's a thing you can do for sure with the right kind of horse, and this one gives you the right indications. I wanted to ask you, last weekend you won the Remington Park Oaks with Honor D. Lady, that your fourth graded stakes win, this one for Safi Joseph Jr. You also had a bunch of mounts for Safi on Saturday on the Pennsylvania Derby card. How did those come about? How'd you end up in Oklahoma?
Well, I've been riding for Safi, you know, when as needed. the last year or so. Ever since when I won the Penn Mile, he actually called me like the week after that and asked me to come down to Florida. So I went down there, I rode for a weekend, rode maybe six or seven for him, did okay, win one, a couple seconds and thirds and stuff. And then he's just kind of been in touch since then, sending me wherever he needs riders. You know, when one of his main guys can't go or, you know, they're riding somewhere else for him, he asked me to go. The park thing was a little bit last minute. I didn't have any of those calls until entry day. I don't know if Gaffleone took off or what, he got stuck, but he threw me on those three horses. And then Remington was kind of a plan a couple weeks in advance, but yeah, he throws me on as needed, and I'll go anywhere he asked me to, really.
If he's going to put you on horses like that, you have to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He puts in a lot of really nice horses, and it's a privilege, really. I really appreciate what he's done for me the last year, and he's single-handedly trying to put me on the map a little bit, and he believes in me, which is great.
We're talking with jockey Tyler Connor. Tyler's got the mount on Troppenhagen, who is 3-1 on the morning line in the Laurel Futurity on the turf Saturday afternoon. And you mentioned that Penn Mile race. That was another of your graded stakes wins. That was on Wow What a Summer for Chucky Lawrence. That horse was about, I don't know, a billion to one when they left the gates there.
Yeah.
When you're on a horse like that, what's your mindset when you're on a horse that, you know, I think he was 80 to 1 or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just no pressure. Especially in a race like that, you don't expect them to run nearly that good. And with the turf being as soft as it was last year, I just kind of let him kind of put me where he was happy and got to the fence. I thought was the best part of the racetrack. It was, you know, there was no divots in it or holes. It was very smooth, and he handled it well, obviously. It was kind of a speed bias track also, so once I got to the lead and let him kind of cruise along, it was kind of game over.
Is there a moment there when you kind of say to yourself, like, holy cow, I think I'm going to win this race?
Yeah, about the 3/8 pole, when I kind of gave him his head, he kind of not like spurted away, but he kind of opened up a little bit and was kind of full run at that point. And when they never got to me, I was pretty confident. Obviously, I wasn't riding confidently, but, a turf course like that, when it's soft and speedy, they kind of struggled down the lane, and he was kind of skipping over it.
Now, I did want to ask you about this. A couple of years ago, Doug McCoy did a story on you for theracingbiz.com, and I remember reading the story and saying, man, this is quite a story. You're probably one of the very few jockeys who took up riding horses in part, or maybe it's not even related specifically, but the activity you were doing before is even more dangerous than being a jockey. Tell us about motocross and how you end up on horseback.
Yeah, I mean, my love for motocross is very strong. I still ride on occasion. I did some pro races this year, actually, just to kind of check it off the bucket list a little bit. It's something I've always wanted to do, and now that I had a chance to do it, I just did it. But, yeah, I've been riding motorcycles since I was 5 years old, and this is always the only thing I've really ever done growing up. I never played school sports or anything like that. I just rode dirt bikes. So it's just what I love to do, and it's a passion of mine. But I got hurt in, like, 2013. I broke my back for the second time. It was just minor, but it was enough to where I had to take time off and kind of let my back heal to where so it wouldn't further the injury. So, yeah, I just kind of, honestly, I dropped out of high school to ride motorcycles. I got my GED, and then I was, like, working for my dad at the racetrack, just grooming horses and stuff. Never even sat on a horse. I used to ride a little mini pony when I was little, like with a bull rope, like a rodeo clown, but that was about it. So I never really sat on a horse, and I figured, what else am I going to do with my life at this point? So I started galloping. My dad taught me how to ride, and my mom was a jockey, so it was just kind of in the blood. And it's kind of a not a last minute thing, but I didn't really have much else going for me, so I just decided to do this.
That was jockey Tyler Connor. Interesting backstory. Interesting mount in the Laurel Futurity, Troppenhagen. I think I've said that name about 10 different ways here. So maybe we'll wait and see what Dave Rodman has to say this afternoon. But Troppenhagen, 3-1 morning line favorite in the Laurel Futurity. We are at our final segment, and that is going to be John Piazzik. John Piazzik writes, does handicapping on the racingbiz.com, works for the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, going to catch us up on some Maryland Million news and help us handicap a couple of these races. Here's my conversation with John Piazzik.
John, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. Got some pre-Maryland business, pre-Maryland Million business to transact here with a bunch of stakes on the card at Laurel. But I know your wandering eyes are starting to look ahead to Maryland Million. Let's talk a little bit of Maryland Horse Breeders Association business. What do you guys have going on as we start getting into Maryland Million season?
Plenty of big events coming up here as we are just 2 weeks away from Maryland's Day at the Races. The night before the Maryland Million, Friday, October 13th, join us at the Maryland Horse Library and Education Center at 321 Main Street in Racerstown for our annual Sip and Win cocktail reception and live auction benefiting the Maryland Horse Foundation. Bid on some great items, enjoy the company of Maryland owners and breeders, and enjoy nice cocktails and hors d'oeuvres. We'll start at 6 o'clock. It goes till 9. Tickets are available till October 9th. To purchase tickets, visit MarylandHorse.com and go to our events page or call us at 410-252-2100. And if you want to come by the library and buy them in person, that's cool too.
All right. Good stuff there. The Sip and Win, live auction, silent auction, all sorts of good things. Good ways to support the Maryland horse industry as we head towards Maryland Million. But as I said, we've got some stuff to do first. We got the Salima, the Laurel Futurity, among other races today, John. And so let's talk about these three turf races. Let's start with the Salima, mile and a 16th. This is one of the great historic Maryland races, maybe lost a little bit of luster here. Not quite the race it once was when it was grade one, but it's $150,000 stake for two-year-old fillies going around the ground on the turf. And nice big field here, pretty evenly matched. What are you looking at?
Well, I went toward a Chad Brown horse, as many people on the East Coast and grass races are wont to do, tripping down from very rainy New York. No rain here scheduled for today. Number 9, Positive Carry, Chad Brown trains. Nick Juarez up. She was the so-called other Chad in her debut at Saratoga, went off at 6-1, showed good tactical speed, couldn't quite get the job done, ended up second though, beaten only about 2 lengths. I'm earning a very strong figure on the business scale in 83. Nobody else in here has really run that well on grass. The only one who's matched that figure in her career is the 5, Brock Nardini, who was well beaten in the Natalma last time out. This one coming in here in better form, has solid tactical speed, should get a great trip under Nick Juarez.
All right. Positive Carry there for Chad Brown. We've got Low Mileage, local interest there. I just talked with Bird and Grady, the owners of Low Mileage, and they're excited. This horse ran really well, I thought, in the Jamestown, going 5.5 on the turf at Colonial. Going to have to stretch it out here, John.
Well, she was cross-entered that day in the Timonium Juvenile, and John Salzman Jr. thought so much of her, he decided to pay the shipping cost, send her down to Virginia, and it paid off as she reared off the pace and drew away pretty impressively. Didn't run a huge speed figure, but nonetheless, got a win on grass, got a stakes win on grass. Has been getting better in her last few starts. I thought even close, well, 2 starts back in the Keswick when she missed the board. As you mentioned, she has not gone beyond 5.5 furlongs. Will have to prove herself going longer. However, nothing in her pedigree really suggests that she can't get a longer distance. I think she'll be okay going here. And perhaps with the out-of-town shippers, she'll slide up through the cracks.
Yeah, no, she's mineshaft out of a Distorted Humor mare, should get a route of ground, at least that's what the breeding says. Anything else you want to say about the Salima Stakes?
I like the long shot in here. Number 4, Hecate for Zoe Valvo and Dennis Arujo got put up as the winner in her debut at Colonial, was running on well that day. Think she's another one who looks like a good value play. I was going to try to fade number 6, Yada, for Graham Motion. Wasn't that impressed. Final time of her last start at Kentucky Downs, and I think she'll be a big underlay.
All right, John's going to go 9-4-3-5 in the Salima Stakes. You can read John's picks on theracingbiz.com every day of live racing in Maryland.
Couple races after that.
The Laurel Futurity. The Laurel Futurity used to be one of the premier two-year-old races in the country when it was contested on dirt, and horses like Secretariat and Affirmed came through this race. I don't know if we'll have a Secretariat or an Affirmed here, but hey, you never know. Mile and a 16th on the turf, $150,000 for the two-year-olds. John Troppenhagen.
Yes, on the inside, based at Penn National, also cross-entered in the Pilgrim at Aqueduct on Sunday. However, based on the weather forecast, I have a hard time imagining that race is going to stay on the grass, so I think he's a pretty safe bet to run here. Ran huge on debut at Monmouth Park back on September 3rd. Got caught in a pace battle the whole way. Had to go an opening quarter in 22.61 seconds. Pretty fast for any two-turn grass race, let alone one featuring two goals. However, he had plenty left late. Kicked on to win by 4 lengths. Ran a solid figure of 73 that day. Will show speed toward the inside. Don't think he'll have to go that fast here.
Tyler Connor rode him on debut, has the return mount, just won the Grade 3 Remington Park Oaks last weekend. So hoping for another nice stakes win with this Penn National-based runner. You also have Edgartown and Blame the Tax, a little bit of a long shot there.
Blame the Tax, at least on the percent scale, has the highest last out figure and 81. Don't get 20-1 on the winning line too often on the best last out figure in the field. That's what we have here. The son of Anchor and Hope's Holy Boss also won his debut on the lead. Set the pace, kind of tired late, found a second gear, and drew off to win by 1 1/4 lengths. He's another one who should be able to handle a longer distance, being out of the Blame the Dress. Workout since then happened solid. Had a good 5-furlong drill 2 Saturdays ago at Fair Hill. I think you'll get the right price. Edgartown comes in from the Midwest for Joe Sharp. J-Ron Obosa is named to ride. He was also on a pretty contested pace in his last start. Also ran a 73, just like Troppenhagen. I think he's eligible to take a step forward second time out.
Actually, interesting factoid there. Edgartown, that was a maiden race at Kentucky Downs. Purse of that race, higher than the purse of the Laurel Futurity, $156,000 maiden race, which is just a preposterous amount of money for maidens. Interesting thing, John, that you were pointing out that Blame the Tax has the highest last Brisnet figure. And what's interesting about that is that the buyers are completely different. Troppenhagen got a 71 on debut in the buyer scale. Blame the Tax got a 56. That's why Blame the Tax is going to be 20-1 on the morning line and probably going to go off at a price. So if you like the Brisnet scale, John, better, you're going to be pretty happy with how that plays out.
All right. I guess we'll see which speed figure maker is right and which one is wrong on Saturday.
Maybe. Or maybe it'll just be more grist for the mill on the debate. So anyway, all right, John going 1-6-8-10, Troppenhagen to get the money in the Laurel Futurity. John Piazek, thanks for joining me. We'll be talking much more in the weeks to come as we head towards Maryland Million, but good luck with today's card at Laurel Park.
Thank you, Frank. Same to you.
That's going to do it here for us on another episode of Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We do appreciate it. Thanks to our show supporters, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Wanamakers.com online horse auction site. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show, which featured Gary Quill, Berg Moberly and Grady Griffin, Tyler Connor, Phil Capuano, and John Piazza. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you in the winter circle.